Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
All right. Well, welcome everybody to today's show. My name's Mark Kohler, and so excited to be here with you. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I've kicked off the morning with a little more caffeine than usual. You know, that's a bad combination. It's like dynamite for me because I've got enough energy coming out of my ears already. So I'm just feeling it, feeling the power and excitement today. Welcome to all of you that may be a new listener. This is a show about saving taxes, building wealth, protecting our assets, living the dream, and I'm your host, Mark Kohler, a CPA, attorney, entrepreneur, author, real estate investor, family man. Got a kid going off to college, 4 kids. This is a big week for us. School started. Dropped my little 10-year-old off at elementary this morning as well. And amongst all that, I do find a little, just a little free time to go surfing once in a while, as well as hit the gym, trying to drop a few pounds and look good on the camera. You see a few videos on YouTube. I'll just verify camera adds 10 pounds. So work it off. If you're going to do some camera, you know, this holiday season's on the way. If you think there might be some family videos going on, drop a few pounds. I'll just tell you right now, it's not pretty when looking on iMovie or Final Cut when you're doing some editing. They can't edit that weight off. It's just not, it's not there. Anyway, today's show is going to rock. I am so excited about today's show. We've got a returning guest of mine. He's such an awesome individual. He's a great guest for a show. He's an excellent speaker. Chris Albin. Chris Albin, he's out of Chicago. And if you read the bio at all on him a little bit about the show today, he's a real estate investor in the trenches and was a school teacher for years and built up close to 300 rental properties in his portfolio while being a school teacher. Does he need any more of an introduction? I mean, all of us are just in awe, you know, right? How'd you do that? Well, he's going to talk about how he did it today on the show. He's been on before, and he's going to help us figure out ways that we might be able to buy our rental property before year end. It's a challenge I make to all the readers of my book, What Your CPA Isn't Telling You. It's every time I speak, I talk about that. It's so, so important to try to get a rental property on your portfolio each year. Now, I know some of you hate rentals. Some of you are not a big fan of real estate per se, but I want you to at least hear me out. You know, hear this kind of stuff out, because it can be tough to build up a traditional retirement structure with 401ks and IRAs because we as Americans are poor savers. But when we can buy a rental property, it forces us to make that commitment long term to a property that can produce cash flow and future equity. That's retirement, baby. That's where it's at. So I'm just like you. I'm not a great real estate investor. That's why I love to have folks like Chris Albin come on the show. I just kneel down and sit at his feet and listen. And so we're excited to have him. He'll be joining us here at the bottom of the hour or close to it. Until then, I've got some important announcements and going to be covering our tax and legal tips that we do each week here on the show. And a lot of fun. We're going to just jump right into it. So, some of you, I know, this is a stressful week. This is a busy week because it is corporate tax deadline. If you extended your tax return in the spring, September 15th is when your corporations and LLC tax returns are due. Now, some of you might just have had a stone fall into your stomach, and you're like, "Oh, what? It is. This is the deadline. I haven't done anything, or I've got." We're sending out emails every day, trying to remind our clients where we haven't seen their info yet. That yes, this is the week. September 15th is the deadline. Now, of course, you can imagine at our office, we're swamped trying to just get with the people that sent in their info 2 or 3 weeks ago and trying to perform last-minute miracles. But let me say this. It is not the end of the world. This was an item in the newsletter I wanted to highlight. I send out a newsletter every week. If you're not on my newsletter, please get to markjkohler.com. You'll see my blog articles and important deadlines and tips every week. I'm going to hit a couple right now. The first one is, if you do miss filing your S-Corp or your S-Corporation or your LLC before September 16th, the 15th on Sunday, so it's due on Monday, if you miss it, the penalty is $195 per month, but that's per shareholder. So if it's just you that own your own corporation, your penalty is only $200. It's not the end of the world. Don't stress. Get your info into us if you need a CPA help and if you haven't already committed to our office. Get the info in and get it going because we need to finish it by, you know, October, and that way we keep the penalty to a minimum. But it's not a huge penalty is what I want to say. So $195 is not the end of the world. So if you haven't filed an LLC, now this could include some of you out there that are using your LLC with self-directed IRAs. Some of you that have an S corporation for fix and flips and rehabs, or you're in the real estate business already, or is a licensed agent, or dentists, doctors, engineers, any of you out there with that S corporation for your operations, or an LLC with partners, including IRAs, your deadline is this week. So think about it. Make sure you're on it. Some of you are like, Mark, get off it. I've already filed. So you're the lucky one. So be happy. All right. Next point I've got to make. This is huge. October 1st is the rollout of Obamacare with all of its majestic power and influence. This is when the state exchanges roll out. This is so important. Health insurance, as you know it, is changing October 1st. Everybody, even if you have an employer that's providing health care to you right now and you think you can ignore it, everybody is going to have to re-enroll with one of the four major types of insurance that are going to be provided across the country. All insurers, including the state exchanges, now have four plans. That's it. It's called the Platinum, Gold, Silver, and Bronze. They're called metal plans. Metal is in an alloy. That's Platinum, Gold, Silver, and Bronze. Now, your employer may roll out a Platinum plan for you. Your employer may only give you a Bronze plan. You may have to go out and buy your own plan, and that's where these exchanges come out. I'm going to be holding a special webinar at the end of this month. I hold a webinar every month. It's part of my Strategic Wealth Alliance webinar series. It's like $20. Full hour in front of my computer screen and webcam. The end of this month, I'm going to do a full hour on the healthcare rollout. It'll be far worth. It'll be totally worth your $20 to tune in later this month. I'm going to be researching, spending a lot of hours to provide that. I don't sell insurance. I mean, this is it. I'm just providing education. This is something I think your CPA should be teaching you. And it's hard to sometimes get a straight answer from a health insurance agent because they have an agenda to sell something. So I will be rolling out a ton of information on these exchanges. But come October 1st, you have to buy your own insurance or re-enroll with your employer, or there's a penalty. Come next year, you are now penalized up to 1% of your income if you don't have health insurance. So if you're an entrepreneur and you don't have health insurance, this is your day of reckoning. This is a big deal. So this fall is where it's at. Now, for those of you that are coming to one of my wealth transformation workshops, my personal workshops I do in the fall, I do 6 of them around the country. I will be covering this in my workshop. So don't come to the webinar. It's fine. Just come to the workshop, and I'll be covering the same thing. But I'm going to give all of you links to your exchanges by state, what the rules are. And in the newsletter today, and why I wanted to bring this up, is as an employer, if any of you have employees, you have to give a special distribute a special notice to all your employees, whether you provided health insurance or not. Some of you are like, well, Mark, I don't even give health insurance to my employees. Why do I need to worry about this? You have to provide a Department of Labor approved written notice before October 1st. Now, guess what? In my newsletter, I give you the link to your approved Department of Labor notice. It's there for you. No cost. Just go download it. Fill out the dumb thing. It's complicated to some degree. But if you don't provide health insurance, it's more of an easier type form. But go check it out. It's in my newsletter. It's under my weekly message. There's several links in there. Who has to do this? Virtually every employer. So rather than read the garbage on if you can get out of it, it's just easier to do it. But there's a couple links in there on if you don't have insurance or you do have insurance, check that out. So very, very important. That's in my newsletter. And again, at the end of this month, when I do my work, whether it's at a workshop or in my webinar, I will be giving those links and those forms out as well. So big deal. So everybody, buckle up. This is where Obamacare, for all of its good and all of its bad, I know it's a very controversial topic, the Affordable Health Care Act is rolling out with all its vengeance. This is it. This is how we pay for it. Taxes, penalties, and enrollment requirements are now hitting. It's funny how all this hit after the presidential election. It's pretty good timing on his part. I like it. Okay, now, today, our tax and legal tip, because we got to get this guy back to work. He is dying at the office. He's not even eating or sleeping. We've got Dustin Johnson on the line, a regular contributor to our show. He's our one of our whiz CPAs back at the office. I can't believe we even got him to come on the show for 10 minutes. Dustin, welcome to the show.
Mark, hey, I'll take 10 minutes out of the day to come on the show.
Dude, you're awesome. Wow. Well, what do you got for us? You got a little tax tip, maybe? How are you holding up? You doing okay? You're breathing?
You know,
are you getting any rest?
We're getting a little rest, breathing a little bit, and eating a little bit. But it'll be good when it's over. It's like one of those Survivor shows. You know, you see how they get in there, and then they lose 15, 20 pounds during the month that they're in there, and then they get out and say what a great experience it was. So we're in the middle of that right now.
I'm telling you, folks, my vision is to have a reality show of an accounting firm during tax season. That's my goal. I want to have. I mean, if they can do freaking Duck Dynasty, I mean, two guys. If they can do Duck Dynasty, you can do an accounting firm, right? Come on. That's my vision. I'm going to work it. I'm going to make it happen. So
Beautiful. Anyway,
dude, you got a tip for us? What do you got?
I wanted to talk about SEP IRAs just quickly.
Very important.
And the reason I want to bring it up is, you know, we've got a few clients that are looking at this, and a lot of times we don't push a SEP IRA first and foremost to our clients. We try and get them into a 401k with their S corporation because you can put more money into it. It's easier to push money into a 401k, more money than a SEP IRA. But depending on the time of year, sometimes it's not an option. So a 401k to put money in for 2012 is no longer an option, and hasn't been an option for, almost 9 months now. So, but we've still got this option with the SEP IRA for 2012, and we've got some clients that are looking at it.
I like it. You know, I've often called the SEP IRA the help me I screwed up plan, and that's really what we can do this week. And I want to I'll say it a different way, Dustin. I love what you're talking about here, is that this week, in the next 5 days, because it's not going to happen on Monday, but the next 4 days, today's Tuesday, you can make a contribution to a SEP IRA. Go into any bank and open one if you want. Call us. We can give you some financial advisors that will look at the big picture and get you into a 401k sooner rather than later. But you can still do a SEP contribution this week inside your S corp and take a tax deduction that can be significant, and then we can roll it into a 401k later. Now, I guess, Dustin, this isn't just S corps. I mean, this is anybody that has a sole proprietor as well.
No, you're correct. The S corporations, however, will be due in the next 4 days. That contribution needs to be made. If you have a partnership or individuals, where it flows through and the income with a partnership, where the self-employment income is taxed at the personal level, you've got until October 15th to pay it. But with an S corporation, to make that contribution into a SEP IRA, you have to have taken wages out through the company. And there are limitations based on how much you took as wages through your S corporation. So I guess there is a little bit of restriction. You can't have not taken any salary through your S corporation and now want to go back in and make a SEP contribution for 2012.
Yeah, and I love that you're getting into some of the more details, particulars. This is one that, folks, if you're considering it, just know it's there. Talk to your tax advisor in the next 5 days if you can get a hold of them. I will recommend if you any sort of gift basket, donuts, or Taco Bell takeout,
will get you in a faster track with your CPA.
Much appreciated.
But no, get a conversation this week and go, hey, can I do a SEP contribution? What would the ramification be? And a lot of times clients are like, hey, I can either give $10,000 to the IRS or I can put $10,000 into a SEP and only give maybe $6,000 to the IRS. And so it's almost like free money going into your CPA that would have gone to the IRS. And that's significant. So run the numbers. Dustin, great tip. I mean, this is something that everybody could be talking about here this last week before the filing deadline.
Well, perfect. Yeah.
Well,
let us know if you have any questions. Like you said, let us know if you have any questions. We're here. We're busy, but we're available, and we can answer some of these questions. So,
yeah, give a call to the main office. Talk to Marisha, Olivia, or August. They'll get you with your personal tax consultant and our team, and they'll get you feedback right away. Please be patient, folks. We really appreciate it. If you're listening to the show, I guess, well, some of you that may not have the main number written down, let me give it to you. It's 888-801-0010. That's 888-801-0010. That's August, Olivia, or Marisha are on our admin team. They can help you out. And again, if no matter who you're working with, reach out to them this week and consider a SEP contribution. Good idea. Thanks, Dustin.
Perfect. Thank you, Mark.
All right. See you later. Good luck. All right. Well, that was good to have Dustin come online. I know how busy he is. Folks, if you've just joined us, we're going to be talking shortly here with Chris Albin, the amazing, unforgettable real estate investor in the Chicago greater metropolitan area. He's a great friend of mine, a returning guest here on the show. I'll be introducing him here more fully here in a moment, and talking about buying your rental property before year end. He teaches many, many classes around the country on creative acquisition strategies. We're excited to hear from him. Now, before then, we still have one more little legal tip that we like to cover before we get into our guest, our rollout highlight of the show, I guess. So we'll talk with Lee Chen. I think we've got him here on the line. Lee is our attorney running the California office of KKOS Lawyers, a huge asset to the firm. Business, tax planning, as well as he's a fighter. He gets to court once in a while, and he's had some big wins this year. So we're excited for him. Lee, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mark. Good to take another 10 minutes off as well for me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Not as much pressure with tax time for you, I suppose, but we know nonetheless you've got a full workload. Well, Lee, what do you got for us? Any legal experience this week that you could share with us?
Yeah, well, my pressure comes from a different angle in solving problems. And, you know, for people who've worked with me, they know that, I do IRS stuff. I talk about asset protection, real estate deals, sometimes even asset protection within a marriage. And in all of these situations, I'm constantly running into a very simple situation, record keeping. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. I had a client come to me. Married, getting a divorce. He said, well, Lee, five years ago, I bought my house and my mom lent me $100,000 to buy the house. And I said, okay, and now you're getting a divorce. And he says, now I'm not able to get that $100,000 back because I can't prove that my mother gave me that money. And
Oof.
All it was keeping a copy of the check, keeping a copy of the deposit where it went in. You know, you would never think that just keeping one piece of paper could be worth $100,000.
Wow.
And so,
wow.
Yeah. So it's very simple today. My tip is very simple. It's, certain records you just got to keep. I mean, I know it's, we want to simplify our lives. We want to, get rid of all the clutter and stuff. But there's just certain records that you really want to keep, and you don't have to keep a copy of it physically. You can keep it a copy of it electronically. And I just wanted to give you some examples.
No, okay. Awesome. Can I throw one out? Let me throw one out.
Absolutely.
Too? I mean,
absolutely.
Okay, you want some of this? All right, I'll throw it down. Yesterday I had a meeting with a family in the afternoon who had a major lawsuit victory. I don't want to give too many details, but they were able to win the lawsuit because the company did not keep good corporate records. They had argued that, oh, we've been doing all these emergency training, safety training. We've been doing all the safety training just because your family member got hurt on the job. That was their fault because we had trained them all on these items. Guess what? They could not prove they'd had any meetings, that there was any trainings that did take place. And maybe they did. But in court, it doesn't matter what the truth is. It matters what you can prove. And it's sad, but it's fair to both parties that that standard's there. And so, folks, it's not what the truth may be. It's what you can prove, and that's where that record keeping comes into play. Keeping good corporate records, making sure the lease agreements are tight, trying not to commingle with checks. I mean, it just plays into that corporate veil, and they were able to pierce the veil and show liability on behalf of the corporation. I shouldn't say they were able to pierce the veil. They did not get a personal judgment against the owners of the corporation, but they were able to show liability by the corporation because they have not kept good records. And so that was – so, Lee, there you go. I had a meeting just like that yesterday, so, you know.
And, yeah, this is something we come up across a lot when we're dealing with partnerships, when we're dealing with marriages, when we're dealing with IRS stuff. You know, this is really lawsuit and audit protection, keeping these documents. And so, you know, for example, tax returns, people may differ on this, but I think you should always keep your tax returns. You know, some people say, well, keep them for three years, 6 years, what have you. I think you should just keep them because you never know when you're going to need to know a basis issue or could be a recapture issue. Your tax return could be relevant even after you die. And so, you know, that's just an example of something I think you should always keep because that information, you never know when that information might become relevant. Partnership deals, if you enter into a partnership, if you're putting money into a partnership, acquiring property, I would keep those documents. Documents relating to your retirement, I would keep those indefinitely. And just going back to my example, if you're married and your mom writes you a big check so that you can go buy something, you better keep a copy of that check.
Yeah, that's very important. And I'll just add one more note on this is we talked about it about three radio shows back. We had Jeremy Martin on the show, our IT director of our accounting firm, and he talked about using cloud, Dropbox, Neat Receipts, all these different apps that are out there. And there's so many of them. Find one that you like and works for you. But the point is, take pictures of your receipts, take pictures of these documents, scan them in, and just create a cloud folder. Just it could be on anything. It doesn't have to be iCloud if you're a Mac user. Just find an app that coincides with your phone, your reading device if you have an iPad or in your computer so that you have all these going. I'm looking across the room right now at my scanning inbox for Allison. My daughter Allison is coming over to the office right after school. She'll be here about 1 o'clock today. And her job today is to grab that file, that pile of paper and go scan it. And it's got bank statements of mine at a personal level because I'm getting ready for my tax return this weekend. And she's also scanning client notes. She's scanning, I think there's a lease agreement in here. So whatever it is, put it in a pile, and let your kids scan it. Let your parents, your family members, your grandkids, get your family involved as a tax strategy as well and make them your document organizer. And I think that it's very, very powerful. So Lee, gosh, any final note there? A great comment.
No, I love it because I'll be the first to admit it. I don't like keeping records myself, but you gotta do it. You gotta do it. You know, this is really, you know, you say it all the time. It's really the help me help you thing. When you call me, I'm going to be asking you for this stuff. I hope you have it.
Yeah. Good comment. Well, Lee Chen, thank you so much, folks. If you need an asset protection review once a year, just sometimes it can be save you thousands of dollars. Get with your attorney that you love and trust or give us a call. I know Lee consults with clients around the country. Lee can do a review over the phone with 1 hour a year and just talk about what entities you're doing, how are your records, what could you be doing better, and it can save you thousands. I just had a client, again, yesterday, 2 weeks ago that's thinking of divorce, and they've got all sorts of family money intertwined in this, and they're trying to unravel it too. It's interesting you bring up that divorce issue. Well, Lee, thank you. Folks, if you need to get a hold of Lee, call the same main number. I just threw it out there a minute ago, 888-801-0010. That goes to the law firm or the accounting firm, and you can make an appointment with Lee. Lee, thank you.
My pleasure. Talk to you again.
Okay. Appreciate you. All right. Well, folks, we are now ready for our main event. And I'm surely I've embarrassed this gentleman. He's a huge resource to me. I'm going to full disclosure, he manages one of my properties in the Illinois area. I've got this cute little meth lab. It cash flows, and he takes care of it and keeps the drug lords away. He does a great job, and I'm just joking. I am just so thrilled with him. If you've just joined us, we're going to now have Chris Alvin, a educator. He was a school teacher for years and built up over 300 rental properties in his portfolio. Has done amazing things in real estate since then, and taught hundreds, if not thousands, of people around the country. And really is just a man of integrity and honesty. I've never questioned his role as my property manager. He's always been wonderful, and I just never hear any dirt come back on him from clients that have used his services. So it's just an honor to bring him out here on the show. Chris, welcome to the show.
Well, hey, Mark, and thank you very much. I feel very humbled to have that introduction. I scratching my head and wondering who you're describing there, but no, I appreciate it. And when you asked me to share this time with you, I'm really excited. I wrote down some thoughts, and one of the things, because I am an educator, I always want to give something new. I always want to give a new thought out there. So that's always my challenge. Whenever I speak in front of a group or whenever I speak to anybody, I always try to come up with something that I've not ever heard said from a stage or in a conference. That's always it's always a real challenge for me. So I hope that I've met that challenge today. I'm going to share what I've kind of discovered as maybe a twist on a strategy that I often teach. I wanted to make this very different from any prior calls that we've shared together. So I hope that's okay with you.
Absolutely. And let me throw out there, I apologize, I want to make sure that, since, of course, this show is later podcast and we've got people listening on phones as well as computers, I know for convenience sake you may be on a speakerphone, but if you could pick up your line and talking to the receiver, I think we're going to get a better reception, and I apologize for asking you to do that. Let me throw this out too, Chris. Hey, your normal song and dance, we love. So don't feel like you've got to throw out something totally new, because you are phenomenal. So I always feel like that too. I've got all these people that have heard me speak, and I think they get sick of my jokes and stories and the concepts, but a lot of time that repetition helps. And don't feel like you've got to reinvent yourself. We just want to know the basics here today too. So.
Oh, yeah. No, and that's really, it's more of a new twist. And again, always trying to keep things fresh. But first thing I want to do is give contact information just in case I'm rushed at the end. But if anybody wants to reach me, my office number is 217-442-0531. My email is chris@homebuyersperspective.com. So 442.
We'll make sure we can. Oh.
Yep. Okay.
Wait, no, that's good. I'm glad you threw it out. Yeah, there you go. And I know on the chat line, our studio, Lisa, will type that up. So everybody listening via their computer will see that in typing. We will make sure that we repeat that here before the end of the show. So that'll be good. Now, Chris, okay, so let me start out here. I think what everybody wants to know is, how in the heck did you do this? You were a school – was it junior high or high school? What were you teaching?
No, I taught high school. I taught high school English, and I still – I love high school kids. They keep you real. They keep you honest. I still teach the high school group in my church. I work with the teens when they go on their church trips. I'm a chaperone,
And so I still get my kid fixed, but I don't have to put up with the administration anymore, and I don't have to grade a bunch of essays. So everything I loved about teaching I get to do. I still get to teach. I still get to do the stuff I love, but I don't have to put up with all the other stuff.
Okay. So. Well, good. And thank you for all you do. I mean, I'll just say, I'm sure parents approach you all the time and tell you thanks, but as a parent, too, those folks that donate so much time and effort to our teenagers, it's so valuable. Because we know teenagers aren't going to listen to their parents, so they're going to listen to someone.
And being a real estate investor and being an entrepreneur, you kind of set your own hours, and that gives me the opportunity to do these things. So I'm hoping for all the listeners to be able to do that, to be able to move into the place where you dream of being. And it's not so much a place of wealth, it's a place of time. And so I'm hoping that that's true of everyone.
Well, I know this is a very broad question, but I want to ask it anyway. I mean, as I mentioned earlier on, I know you obviously have been on our show before. I think you gave – it was four or five. We've kind of listed them out before, four or five strategies on how to buy a rental property with no money down or bad credit. You teach these creative acquisition strategies. But I guess I want to ask this is how in the world is being a busy father, husband, teacher and a high school teacher, how did you build up 300 rental properties? What were the primary strategies you used with, I think most people would say, probably not a large amount of income, although your credit might have been satisfactory, but what were some of the strategies you used? And just in general, tell us how you did this.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that was going on when I first started, we were kind of in the middle of the savings and loan bailout, and some of your more mature listeners will remember that, and some of the younger listeners won't know what we're talking about. But during the S&L bailout, there were, you know, it was a very similar time to what we have right now with the banking crisis, in that banks tend to have more inventory than they really want to deal with, and sellers couldn't sell their properties, and so there was a lot of creative deals that were created because of that. And the only real difference was the interest rates were extremely different at that point. But I was able to, I got myself educated. I was able to find people who needed to sell, and I was able to create strategies that worked for them. And so a lot of the creative acquisitions that I teach were part of those strategies. And I actually, I talked about three or four of them last time we talked, and I was hoping to talk a little bit more about the equity sharing strategy that I employed early on when I looked like I was about 12 years old and I was talking to, you know, gray-haired sellers. So we were hoping to, the big thing is being able to do what you say you're going to do, and not overpromising, and that's always important, and that's always been a mantra of mine. So I think having a number of different strategies, and one of the things I always teach in my class is being able to make multiple offers. So you don't say it's my way or the highway. You say, you know, we could do a contract for deed. We can do an equity sharing agreement. We can do a seller carryback mortgage, a lease with an option. You tell me what's good for you. And then instead of them saying yes or no, they say, well, tell me about what you mean by this. And it gives me a better opportunity to show them the benefits of a certain strategy. And so I think that's really the thing that really put me over the edge there, was able to demonstrate the benefits of the seller.
Okay, I like this. So the first concept you're teaching us here is that I was just speaking at the Utah Association of Realtors Conference in Park City last week, and I got up in front of a group of realtors, which I know many of you that are realtors struggle with this, and many of you that are listening that are real estate investors sometimes are critical of realtors because of this, but we get into this mode that we've got to use the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac model. I've got to buy a rental. I've got to put down 20%. I've got to go to the bank. I've got to do it in a traditional format. So the first thing you're teaching us is that when you started to go into the real estate investing world, you said, number one, I'm going to be creative. I'm going to look for ways to create solutions. And number two, I'm going to always keep my word. and follow through with what I make promises to these sellers. Sometimes it means, I know, you've told me before, you've had to eat profit, you've had to eat cash flow because you wanted to keep your commitment rather than make money, which I know is hard for some people to swallow, but you always followed through with what the commitments you made. Is that a fair summary of what you, I mean,
yeah.
Just conceptually, it sounds like what you did.
Right, and that's the important thing, being able to be in a place where you have as few people talking badly about you as possible. And in fact, we had an owner from out of town call, and they asked about a number of rental property managers. And you know, the city person that they talked to said of us that they didn't have any complaints. So if that's the best they can do, that's good. But we appreciate that, you know. And but you know, the thing too is being creative. I think part of what makes me who I am is always looking for new ways of doing things. And I'll give you an example, because this kind of excites me. One of the things I teach is how to buy property or how to beat the market to real estate, how to find that house that's for sale that nobody else knows is for sale. Because if I'm the first one who can approach the seller, it doesn't mean that I'm going to get the best deal. It doesn't mean that they're going to sell to me. But it means that I can beat the auctioneers and the realtors and the other investors. And so, you know, I teach people how to use courthouse research. My standard way of doing that is to teach them through the probate process. But the probate process is just one courthouse research model. But one of the things that recently has been happening with me, because I do practice what I preach, and I peruse the probate files, and these days it's much easier because things are online in my neck of the woods. But the thing that has happened recently is I'm discovering some what we would call informal probate cases, meaning that there's not enough asset value in the estate to actually probate the property. I'm actually pretty far south of Chicago, so real estate in my area is often under $100,000. So if somebody passes away and their house is worth $30,000 and they don't have a lot more in the way of assets, that property may not go through probate at all. And what the last two deals that I've done, the last two offers that I've made, have been to people who have actually had to do, who have property that is owned by somebody who has been dead for many, many years. It's almost like I see dead people out there, you know. So this one person who is well into their senior years, has been managing a home owned by his mother, who passed away over 20 years ago. And so what we had to do was we had to find somebody who knew the mother, and we had to work out and file an affidavit of heirship. And it's a whole different process. So I guess, and then recently I just made an offer on exactly the same thing. They hadn't been dead as long, but they're going to need to do an affidavit of heirship. And I'm starting to think to myself, okay, I'm finding a pattern. How can I create a strategy that will work into this pattern? And so this is the new thing. This is the thing I'm still putting together. But the thing that
– The point being is you're being creative. I like what you're saying here too, is that if you want to – okay, so – and we've got a question here from one of our listeners here that I'm going to
– Sure.
I'll bring him out on the line here. I know what he's going to ask. I love it. But the point here is that I think you're making now, if I can just regurgitate some of your comments and distinctly, is that if you want to be creative in an acquisition, you've got to get there before – oftentimes you have to get there before the market, because if you get there before it's listed on MLS, you've got more options. If it's listed and if it's out there and the seller knows that they're in control, your power is oftentimes dramatically reduced, I would presume. Is that a fair point?
Right, and really what we have to do as investors, we have to beat something, and most investors learn how to beat the price. So we try to negotiate and beat that price. Well, if you're going to make some kind of creative offer, you know, many times you give up price for terms. You trade price for terms. So what I try to do is I try to beat the market. I try to be the first one on the doorstep. I try to be the likable person that they can always fall back on if they, you know, they can shop my offer around, and if they can find something better, that's fine. But if they can't and their situation changes and they need the money or they need the house gone, you know, vandals have come in and stolen the copper, whatever it is, they always know about me. I'm kind of the foundation in their search for the buyer, and I like being in that position. It gives me a lot of credibility. And so, yeah, you have to beat something. Most people try to beat the price. You know, I try to beat the market.
I like it. I like it. Okay. Well, we've got a caller here from Phoenix calling in with a question regarding those terms. So let me bring him out here. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So go ahead. I think you're asking about those terms. Are they realistic? Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been in and out of this for a long time, since the early 90s, really, and I've bought and sold, and I haven't owned for about 7 years, and I'm in a market where it's just off the hook. So tell me the reason why somebody should go to do a deal with me with little money down, with I no longer, I'm a general contractor, and the last 5 years have been tough for us, so my credit is not what it once was. So tell me how you come into this market. It's so totally different than Southern Illinois, where you're 100 miles away from Chicago and the average property value is $85,000. I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, and I can buy $40,000 properties for $5,000 all day long. I just don't see it here. I'd love to know how you do it.
Well, I think if I could say this too, Chris, a no money down bad credit strategy isn't going to work in every market, but can it work even in nationwide? What is your response to Sean there? Great question,
right,
Sean. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. Great question. And one of the things that I always tell people is not every strategy works well in every market. Every strategy can work in every market. In fact, you know, almost no strategy was ever developed in Southern Illinois, except for anything that I teach and say. I've never heard this out there before. But I have students. I have one student I talk with regularly who lives in Maui. One time I was out there teaching a training, and I was on kind of a house tour with some of the students, and I. You know, they said, well, this house sold in 2007 for $1.2 million. The houses, you know, it's been foreclosed. The houses around it are selling somewhere between $450,000 and $550,000. So they're saying, well, you know, we can get this $1.2 million home for $450,000 to $500,000. And I'm thinking to myself, well, it's not really a $1.2 million home. It's a $500,000 home. That being said, I asked, okay, well, what does it rent for? Well, maybe $2,000 a month. And I'm just quickly doing math in my head. A buy and hold strategy does not work there on that hill in Maui. Now, there are other neighborhoods maybe in Maui where a buy and hold might work a little bit better. But if I am an investor in Maui and I'm living on that hill, either I'm going to do fix and flip or I'm going to invest long term somewhere in the Midwest or somewhere in the middle south, you know, Tennessee and Georgia and in that area where you can still buy decent value that will cash flow. So not every strategy works well everywhere.
Okay, and Chris, so let's get down to brass tacks here. Give us a strategy that is a no money down strategy that might work in some of these Midwestern, Central South areas. Like, if you don't mind, just kind of,
sure.
Say, guys, if you know, here's what bread and butter, no money down type strategy that you think if I gave you 72 hours, go find me a deal, Chris. You know, like again, I joked about a reality show. You got 72 hours, go find a deal and make it happen. What would you do if you were under that?
Right.
If you had that.
Okay. If I'm in a high area, you know, one of my students is also in D.C. and she doesn't make an offer on anything unless it's over $800,000. So I understand these areas. I don't live in those areas, and I choose not to actually do a lot of real estate in those areas because, you know, I prefer long-term buy-and-hold strategies, which make more sense. So if I'm in a high-end market, the first thing I would do is I would probably change my strategy, and I wouldn't be a long-term buy-and-hold person if I wanted to buy in that market. So that means that I have to be able to make offers that make sense to me, and the only way that offers in high-end areas tend to make sense is usually cash offers, and I think that's Sean's kind of – that's the barrier there. And so if I have no money and no credit and I need to make cash offers, I am going to be leaning toward one of two strategies, and the first strategy would be equity sharing. And there are a number of ways to do equity sharing. Equity sharing could be joint venturing, it could be partnering, it could be buying into an LLC, it could be buying into a private placement. There's a number of things you could do with equity sharing. In fact, one of the things that I'm doing right now, I've got
Give us an
partners.
Example of a deal. Give us an example of a deal. So would you try – you first thing said early on in the show is that you would want to find a – and I know it's hard when you teach a full-day class on this, and I'm trying to dissect out some of these specific points that you'd like to build a foundation on. It's hard. I know the point with taxes.
Sure.
But so give us an example of a – you're going to be in a market of maybe a $50,000 to $100,000 property. Mm-hmm. You want to do a buy and hold with no money down. You first got to find a property before the market does. What type? So that would be step one, I would presume. And then,
right.
What type of terms or offer? How would you do? What would an offer look like?
Okay, I want to buy a property. The first thing I would do is I'd find a property that nobody else knows is for sale. So in my world, I would probably look in either probate or foreclosure, except everybody knows about foreclosure, maybe eviction. I get a lot of stuff out of eviction these days, but I teach that in fairly a long class. But
yeah.
What I would do is I'd find a property that nobody else knows is for sale. And at that point, I would go and find the seller. The reason I know it's for sale is there's a distress situation. I know that because of my courthouse research. I find that seller who's in the distress situation. I try to find out what is in that seller's mind. Okay, so a lot of times they will define their challenge as money, or they'll define their challenge as time, or they'll define their challenge however they define their challenge. Now I know what challenge I am up against. I need to find a solution for that person's challenge. Now, the real challenge may not have anything to do with what that person perceives as the challenge. But if that person says, I need all cash, okay, that's the challenge. So now, if I'm in a situation, $100,000 market, I need to come up with all cash to buy this house at $50,000 because that person's in a situation where they need to move very quickly on something, or the house needs a lot of work and it's not going to appeal to the realtors and the general market. So the first thing I would do is I would crunch the numbers. I would determine what is the model for that investment. Do the numbers work well as a buy and hold? Do the numbers work better as a buy and as a fix and flip? If the numbers, and a lot of times in these markets they don't work well as a buy and hold. That's the real challenge. So you've got to determine what is going to be the strategy, and the numbers will tell you that. The area rents will tell you whether you can buy and hold it. The retail market will tell you whether you can fix and flip it. Once you determine your strategy, then if I have no money and I have no credit and I just got out of jail yesterday, okay, what I would do is I would find people who have what I lack. So if I needed money, I would find somebody who has money but is looking for an investment. If I have the deal but I don't have the talent, like Sean is a building contractor, I may not have a building contractor skill set. So that's what Sean would bring to the table. I would be trying to find somebody who has the skill sets that I lack, and I would put together that team. I would put together that that equity sharing group, and then I would make the offer on that property if the person needed all cash. Now, if the person said they needed all cash, like most sellers do, I would make an offer and I would say, okay, we could give you all cash at this number, or you know, if you only need $20,000 to fix your challenge because your challenge is that, you know, you need a new car, whatever it is, you don't need all this money, and think of the tax ramifications. You know, you could talk to them and say, okay, we could also do a lease with an option. So a second opportunity is, okay, they want cash, they can list it with a realtor, or they can sell me an option. They get some money up front, and maybe I'll have a three-month option, a six-month option. I get that thing fixed. I get it put out on the market the way, you know, that professional investors would market the property, get the thing sold. That person saves their real estate commission. There's a value to that seller to let me have a little bit of time with his or her property. And the way that I would get that time is to give them is to purchase an option from them. So the first strategy I would say is an equity sharing to come up with some cash. Second strategy is you know, figure out what they would need right now and then get some kind of an option for that amount of money. So again, determining the first thing that one needs to determine is what is the seller's challenge or their perceived challenge. What does the market tell you is the best strategy? And at that point, you make your offer based on what you know.
Okay, and I want to repeat this. And I've been making notes here. I think this is phenomenal. So everybody that maybe says, oh, that was too much to process here. Okay, focus in on this, especially if you're listening live and you're driving down the road or you're trying to eat a sandwich at your computer. Here's what I'm hearing you say, Chris, and then you correct me if I'm wrong. Number one, find the market. Sean calls from Phoenix. We know Phoenix is blowing up. It's you got 10,000 other real estate investors you're fighting to find deals before they hit the market. A seller's got to come off a freaking, you know, boat or an alien ship to not realize he's in control there. But so I think the point Sean's saying is, hey, am I going to find a strategy like that? This is going to work in Phoenix? And the answer may be no. So the first thing is you got to find a market that works with your model. Number one, it could be in Tennessee, it could be in Oklahoma, Southern Illinois, wherever it is, find that market. Number two, I got to find the property before I find the market. Before the market finds it. Sorry, I'm going to repeat that. Find the property before the market finds it. So I've got to use creative strategies by learning and educating myself, whether it's a probate, an eviction, a foreclosure, some sort of strategy to find a property before everybody else does. That's step two. Step three, I got to analyze that property to find out which strategy is going to work best. Is it a buy and hold? Is it a fix and flip? Is it an option? And what's going to work best with that property once you find it? That's number three. Number four is put together your team, which the team could be a money person. It could be technical skill person. It could be a credit person. It could be, who knows what, maybe a relationship person that has a relationship with the seller. But that team is going to be on your side when you go to number five, which is put together the deal. So you're going to then go to the seller with a creative deal strategy, and you were saying equity share or subject to or option or lease option or all these different strategies. You would, again, be educating yourself along the way to know what type of deal to present and be confident when you do it. Now, I don't know this from Adam, and I just extrapolated that as I was taking notes. And Chris, this is phenomenal. Is that a fair five-step process, or what would you add to it?
Right. No, that's a great five-step process. And I would simply add, in making the offer, don't make it an either-or offer. I mean, don't make it a, you know, here's the offer. I'm going to offer you a lease option. You know, give them choices. Say, you know, okay, if you want all cash, you know, I have my money partner and we can offer you this amount of money for all cash. If you would rather have some cash now and you're willing to wait for more cash, we can do this option strategy or we can do this contract for a deed strategy. Give them some choices, because if you say, okay, here's the offer, they look at it and they know they have two choices. They say yes or no, you know, I'll take it or no. But if you give them, you know, three choices, they'll say, well, tell me about this, and it allows you to continue to show the benefit. You got to show the seller the benefit to the seller. They don't care what's in it for you. You have to demonstrate the benefit to the seller. In fact, less than 2 hours before this telephone call, I got a call from a seller. She's got a house in a terrible neighborhood. I mean, you know, as bad as neighborhoods get in this area. I mean, it's like right across the street from the public housing authority. It's just a nasty place. And she wants to sell me her house. And so the conversation kind of drifted from, you know, all cash, and she didn't like that number at all. I was just giving her price ranges, and she said, well, what about contracts? And so she's kind of leading into my creative strategy. And so I'm going to drive by the house after this phone call, and I'm going to call her back. And I'm actually going to be in another state later. I'm going to be in California later this week, and I think I'm going to call her back from kind of a conference call with some other investors in the room, and we're going to learn from that process, because I will be offering her two or three choices, because that's how you get your offers accepted. You give them choices.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay, now I want to repeat this for everybody listening too. This is important. This is what I'm extrapolating from your education here in just our short time together. If you don't have money, if you don't have great credit, deals are not going to fall off a tree into your lap. You've got to do some work, and that's okay. You may have time and ingenuity, and that's going to make up for not having cash or credit. And let me list some of what I'm getting out of this. Number one, you've got to learn what markets work. You've got to put in the time to understand what type of markets do I want to be in. Number two, I got to learn how to find property. I got to understand what's this eviction strategy you're talking about, Chris? Teach me more. Number three, I've got to learn how to build a team. I got to be able to find people with money, find and build that team, and have people believe in me and are willing to work with me on equity sharing so I can build my own net worth so I don't have to use a team. And number four, I've got to understand how to make offers and what options are there for me so I can go in confidently to sellers. And to me, this all is summarized with the word education and just hard work, putting down the TV remote and just learning this stuff in books and classes and videos and webinars. I don't know. I mean, is it doable, Chris? Can the average person do this? Is it too overwhelming?
Yeah, it's absolutely doable. And one of the things that, I mean, I still continue to learn, and one of my favorite things to do is traveling around and talking to people about their local markets. But, you know, I also find people who are very married to their local market. And I've heard a lot of people teach who say, you know, you've got to be able to do real estate where you live. And that's true. I believe that nobody knows your market better than you do. I don't even pretend. When people call me up and they say, Chris, what should I do? I always say, I have no idea because I'm not there. But, you know, you have to be a little bit careful, because I also get people who call me and they believe they know what will work somewhere else. And an example, I have some clients.
And Chris, and hold it, as you alluded to at the beginning of this call, we don't want to get cut off with too less of time here. Tell us what you've got going on right now and how to get a hold of you. Because I know you've got about 1 minute here. What do you got going and how do people get a hold of you?
Right. Yeah, I've got a number of things. One of the things I'm doing is I'm in a bit of a growth mode right now. I've got a number of clients who are just tired of breaking even on property because the banks don't want to cooperate anymore. So they're wanting to unload their property, and there's a lot of equity left in it. I am working out creative deals with other investors. So if you have an interest in buying and holding long-term property, I've got some tremendous opportunities right here to do that. You know, you have to keep in mind that, you know, in the Midwest, you know, you have your $400 a month tenants and you have your $700 or $800 a month tenants, and they're very different people. And so we have a little of both, and we have a lot of all flavors. But now I'm doing a number of equity sharing deals. The way I do it a little bit differently is that my money partners tend to be treated as lenders and equity partners, so everybody has skin in the game. And it's not like you bring the money and I have the time and I've got nothing in it. So it's a very different strategy, and I'd love to talk to anybody who has an interest in that. So
I like it. Now, Chris,
reach, yep.
Yep, you let me repeat it for everybody too here. 217-442-0531.
Right.
217-442-0531. And just email Chris. He's great at returning his email. That's Chris, C-H-R-I-S, at homebuyers, with an S, perspective.com. Homebuyersperspective.com. And folks, if you can't get a hold of him, email me. I'll pass it along. Chris, you are amazing. This was awesome. I'm so glad you found some time to be with us.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Well, Chris, thank you. Will you come back again? We got to have
I will. I'd love to.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Chris Allen, folks. We'll see you next week, Tuesday at 11 a.m. on The Mark Kohler Show.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.